The following podcast is a work of fiction. All characters are the creation of Peter Williams. Any resemblance to someone living or dead is purely coincidental. Thank you.
So, last Tentacle Tuesday we left you with Hicks in a fix, while the detective trudged his way through the woods to Grandpa's cottage. This almost puts me in the mood for a Christmas tune. Over the ivy and past the tombs to Grandfather's cottage we go. If you delay, Hicks will get slain. What a delightful way to go. Ho! Over the ivy and past the tombs. Ha 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 ha, sorry. I get so excited when we talk about the horror days. And speaking of excited and delightful, to get the full effect of today's chapter, I highly recommend some oatmeal cookies and a cup of tea and honey. You'll understand in a little while, I'm sure. But before we start today's chapter, let's revisit that this podcast does contain images of graphic violence, child endangerment, and that salty, naughty language. Love it so. Now, grab your tentacles, those oatmeal cookies, and drink your tea. As today, we visit the distant past with Chapter 14, The Cottage by Sims Divide.
Detective Stevens found himself face down in some brush as he made his way through the thicket that surrounded the hills of Bloody Run Creek. What was that? The third, fourth time that he tripped and fell? He tugged himself free from the undergrowth and looked up at the early morning sky. God, at this rate, it will be dawn before I reach Sims Divide, he grumbled to himself. Man, this was a lot easier when I was 10. It had been over an hour since he left Laura's path, and away from the bodies of Rogers and the EMTs. As he sat there, he could feel the weariness seeping into every joint and muscle of his body. How long had it been since he slept? He thought to himself. If Hicks hadn't allowed him that extra long cat nap yesterday, he really would have been in trouble. He wondered why and how she got involved. More importantly, was she okay? And where was she being held? He pulled himself up and picked the prickly balls off himself and his trench coat. He could hear the running water of Bloody Run Creek off to his right and processed his best angle of attack. From here, he could head towards Rook's path. That should make it easier, although it would still be another hour's journey before reaching the top of Sims Divide. Still, it's better than pressing through these thickets. But he wanted to make sure that no one was following him. I guess I better start moving again, he said softly to himself. He didn't want to linger too long. It would be too easy to lay down in the dried leaves and catch some sleep. It still took another hour of dragging himself through the underbrush before the trees began to thin, giving way to a sea of ivy that rolled down the hillside, crashing up against the crumbling stone walls of the old cemetery. He turned to the right and after 100 yards found himself on the path leading to the north gate. The scent of rosemary met his nostrils and he took a deep breath. He couldn't help but smile as a slew of emotions flooded his memories. The way the scent of a fresh-cut Christmas tree does on an early December morning. The old stone columns marking the gate entrance were now in sight and he hastened his pace. As he neared, he could make out the rosemary bushes planted directly in front of each column. It was an old pagan tradition. The old groundskeeper said,
"It's to help keep away evil spirits."
And then he chided,
"That and it saves me on fresh seasonings."
That man, the groundskeeper, was Jack Stevens, who lived in a small cottage just outside the East Gate. He had passed away about the time Warren had turned 14. A few years after meeting Jonah. Nowadays, Warren kept up with most of the groundskeeping work. The work brought him peace. That and Karen and his son Jack were buried here. They were the last two to be laid to rest in the old cemetery. That is, until he joins them. He pushed open the iron gates and headed past the various grave markers and memorials. It would be a lot easier reaching the east gate this way. Outside, he'd have to fight the ivy, and he had enough of tripping and falling for the night. He could see the cottage roof over the cemetery walls. It sat on an adjoining hillside so that it overlooked both the new and old cemeteries. Beyond that were the green slopes that caressed the Copperhead River until it met the dark, reddish, muddy waters of Bloody Run Creek. At that point was Sims Divide, a whirlpool that was infamous for swallowing small boats, men, women, children, animals too. Some people called it the Devil's Pool, but the town, already having a bad reputation with the occult, didn't want to add to its painful history. He thought back to the day he met Jonah here. It was clear as day. He was 10, maybe 11. He was playing in the woods with some friends, and then, for some strange reason, he decided to come visit Grandpa Jack. He could still hear the tea kettle whistling and smell the fresh-baked oatmeal raisin cookies. He had just sat down and started eating one as his Grandpa Jack lit a fire. As he settled down in his rocker for a smoke on his pipe, a knock came at the door.
"Warren, could you get that for me, please?"
"Sure, Grandpa." He climbed off the stool and opened the large oak door. "Hello?"
A tall woman with green eyes and silver hair smiled at him. Behind her stood a young man, not much older than himself.
"Hello," she smiled. "I was hoping to speak to an old friend. Does Jack Stevens still live here?"
Yes. Who may I say is calling?"
From behind him, he heard his grandfather exclaim in delight,
"Yari, is that you? My goodness, it's been years."
"Hello, Jack. You look well. May I?"
"Of course, of course. Come in, come in. Allow me to introduce my grandson, Warren."
She smiled warmly and said,
"Hello, Warren. Nice to meet you."
She looked the young man over and frowned a little, but initially said nothing. Then she introduced the young man behind her.
"This is Jonah. Jonah Hollander. He's my apprentice."
"Wonderful," Grandpa Jack exclaimed. "Please sit down. I just finished putting up some tea."
The two stood there chatting as his grandfather smoked on his pipe. They laughed loudly at some of the things they had done. Meanwhile, he and Jonah sat quietly, amazed at the images the two presented in their tales. Finally, his grandfather leaned back and, looking over at Jonah, inquired,
"So, Yuri, after what, a millennium? You've taken on an apprentice?"
"Yes, it was a special request," she replied,
looking over at Jonah with a tremendous amount of affection.
"As you can imagine, it's created quite a stir."
"Oh boy, can I? He doesn't usually get involved," he said, taking a drag on his pipe. "I guess he's still hoping that humanity will wake up one day and accept his love and grace."
"Indeed," she replied. "Now, for the reason I came."
She pulled forth a long black object wrapped in a black silk cloth. It almost looked as she was handing him a piece of the night sky.
"Is that?"
Grandpa Jack began.
"No, I still carry the Lumen Sum," Yuri replied. "This is its twin, Eos Delection. If it's okay with you, I would like to keep it here."
"Here?"
Jack nearly fell out of his rocking chair.
"Is that really a good idea? You know, Uriel, I won't live forever."
"Yes, Jack, I know. But these are his instructions."
"I see, I see. How curious."
And then with a big smile,
"Fine, fine. Warren,"
he said, beckoning him to come over.
"Yes, Grandfather?"
"Grab a hold of the tabletop. Yes, just like that. Now, do you feel the button on the side?"
Warren's eyes opened wide. Sure enough, he felt it. He nodded.
"Yes, sir."
"Now, press it."
He did so, and the entire table slid over, revealing a stone staircase under the floor.
"Grandpa," he said excitedly.
"Easy, lad, easy. Your old grandpa has a lot of tricks up his sleeve that you don't know anything about. Now, be a good lad and place this in the chest next to the small wood-burning stove, will you?"
He turned to Jonah.
"And you, young man, I think you should go with him. That way, you'll know exactly where to find it when you need it.
They both did exactly what he said. As the two descended, Yuri looked over at Jack.
That boy.
Yes? What about him?
He's going to have a rough go of things.
Jack frowned.
With your permission, before I go, I would like to give him a gift.
A gift, huh?
Yes, she replied. Something I know will help him when he gets older.
A gift from Yuriel herself. Do as you wish, my old friend. I trust your judgment.
As the two boys emerged from the secret cellar, Yuriel called Warren over.
Warren?
Yes, ma'am.
May I give you a gift?
A gift for me, ma'am?
Yes, she said, her smile gleaming like the sun. He swallowed hard. She had such an overwhelming presence, one of fierceness, and the other of a devoted, loving mother.
If, he began nervously.
Yes, yes, please.
She leaned over to him and whispered in his ear.
I give you his peace.
A sense of calmness filled him as he took a deep breath. It was after that he noticed his strange ability to calm a person's troubled heart. That, and later the ability to stand against the demonic strength of Malik and Master Roon. And now he stood here once more, fumbling for the keys of the old cottage door. He opened it and lit a couple lanterns. Instantly, the room filled with a sense of warmth, a sense of love. Grandpa Jack may be long gone, but it was clear his presence still filled the place. Like when he was 10, he grabbed the table and felt for the button. Pressing it, the table once more slid, revealing the stairs and the dark chamber below. Taking one of the oil lamps, he descended. It was a small, 10x10 chamber. A desk sat in the middle, covered with stacks of books. To his right, he could see an old wood-burning stove next to a hickory chest. He unlatched it and flipped it open. There, sitting where he had placed it, still in the black silk wrap, was Eos de Lexion. He unwrapped it. It was beautiful. A white silver blade about 30 inches long, but unlike most blades, it formed into almost a hammer-like shape at the end. A voice came from behind him. Eos de Lexion, the twin of Lumen Sum. Stephen stood up and quickly shedding light on the shrouded figure of Jonah Hollander.
Jonah! Hello, Warren, he replied softly. I think you might remember my companion.
A girl, 12, stepped out from behind him.
Alex? But how?
It's a long story, Warren. She's really not here. It's just her body working off a spiritual link that I created. But as he spoke, Alex went over and clutched at the coat of Detective Stevens.
Interesting, Jonah said.
What? It seems her body resonates with the act of kindness you showed her when you found her. He looked down at her and felt a little uncomfortable. She was quiet. She literally just stood there, holding onto his coat. Warren looked up and away from the girl and said,
So, now what?
Now, old friend. We have a high mass to attend, he said in a half-sleep stupor. But first, you and I better both get some sleep.
But what of Hicks?
Warren, I can't see past the shadows that linger here. I wish I could promise you something, but...
Then we should go! Now! Warren insisted.
And do what? Remember, friend, I can see your aura. You're spent. So am I. If we go, we'll lose everything. Everything and everyone. Warren knew he was right, but didn't want to admit it.
Fine.
Let's get some sleep. With that, they went back upstairs. Warren took Alex and placed her in his grandfather's bed. As he went to place the blankets on her, she kicked them off, her hand still clutching the coat.
What? You want this old ruddy thing? He asked.
Jonah replied, I think it might be providing a link to her true self. Warren sighed and covered her in the old coat, and she curled up in it like a kitten in a box.
Amazing, Jonah said.
What do you mean her true self? When I saved her from the cultist, she was being overrun by something. It seemed to be transforming her. I think it was preparing her body to be used for some dark purpose. That's why her soul wasn't present. It had separated itself to keep itself intact.
Then where is it now? Stevens asked.
I don't think it's here, in our world, he answered. I think it's where Ikkyatsu crawls.
Ikkyatsu?
You know about that? That thing?
Yes.
Yes, I do.
And you never thought to tell me? To warn me?
It was clear the detective was angry with Jonah. Warren, I honestly don't think you would have believed me or understood. Ikkyatsu is something much older than humanity, older than most of creation. He doesn't exist inside our time or in our dimension. He just is.
Similar to God?
Similar, he replied,
but not God or a god.
While not a stupid beast, it has no ability to create from itself or for itself. It needs stupid fools to help it transcend into our world.
Can we stop it?
No. I'm sorry, we can't. However, he continued, we can contain it. Just like your grandfather did.
My grandfather?
Yes, Jack. He was Uriel's apprentice before me. He sealed Ikkyatsu and dealt the cult a tremendous blow.
My grandfather? Uriel's apprentice?
Well, he always did tell you that he had a lot more tricks up his sleeve, didn't he? Warren sat there in disbelief.
Now, as much as I would love to sit here telling you his story, we don't have time. We truly need to sleep.
Jonah raised his hand, and a soft yellow light caressed the room. Within moments, Warren felt sleepy. He dreamt of a place. He was walking next to a winding river. Stars shone brightly, swirling as if moving with the river itself. As he walked, the sky began to change. A stunningly warm light burst around him. He blinked and held up his hand to cover his eyes. A warm breeze blew against his face and slowly he dropped his hands and looked around. He was in the middle of a large grassy field. The grass, the trees, all seemed deeper, a truer color of green. The sky was a joyous blue that danced with the sun's delightful rays. He heard a voice call out to him, and he spied a garden. His body felt light as he made his way across the grass, dew collecting on his feet. Above him, a hawk screeched as he watched it soar as it drifted towards a lush forest and an endless winding silver river. There were hills and valleys surrounding him in every direction until they met a low-lying row of mountains, their distant peaks spiraling into the clouds. He felt so alive, as if electrified, as an incredible joy swelled up inside him. As he neared the garden, a breeze hugged his frame, wrapping him with a warm, tantalizing aroma. He wished he could have breathed it in forever, he thought. If love had a scent, this was it. Then, the sound of laughter met his ears, and in the back of the garden, he could see a girl swinging effortlessly on a flowering swing, dressed in all white with her blonde hair flowing behind her. She was beautiful. It was almost as if the light was coming from inside her. Seeing him, she smiled and jumped off the swing in midair. She floated like the hawk and drifted down with a giggle towards him.
Interesting, very interesting. Jonah knows all about Ikkyatsu. And your grandfather once held the same job Jonah does now. So is that why the cult's here? Are they seeking revenge for the defeat? Maybe they should go get some tough acting tenactin. Get it? Defeat, tenactin. I shouldn't have to explain these things to you. And how strange is it that Alex seems to remember you, Detective, even though she's just a soulless doll? And now you find yourself dreaming of a distant garden and a girl on a swing. What does that mean? Honestly, I have no clue whatsoever! So I will have another cookie, finish my tea. Delicious. And where does Lord Piotr get his tea and tea accessories? From the Infused Tea Bar in West Sayville, of course. Their website is listed with tonight's episode. If you stop in, make sure you tell Christine that her old friend Lord Piotr sent you. That's because next week you might want a cup of nice, calming tea as we rejoin Geraldine Hicks for Chapter 15, Escape Part 2.